Welcome to the Capital Connection, a weekly program questioning New York State leaders on a variety of issues. Your host is Dr. Alan Chartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Distribution for the Capital Connection is made possible with the help of New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm Alan Chartok. Joining this week is one of our great favorites, Blair Horner, the executive director of the New York Public Interest Research Group, or NYPIRG. Most of us think he's the brightest man in Albany. Welcome back, Blair.
Thanks for having me.
Before we get into the turgid stuff, the state budget, things like that, tell me about how the Donald and the Andrew are getting along with each other.
Well, I mean, it's hard to say. I mean, clearly there's a lot of pressure on any governor of a big state, particularly a blue state, to challenge a red president. And so there's going to be partisan fights that are going to come out of that because Governor Cuomo is viewed as one of the leading national governors for the Democratic team. On the other hand, you got to be careful not to bite the hand that feeds you. The federal government is an important entity. The president has tremendous power. The state of New York has major industries centered in it, like healthcare and Wall Street. The governor has to be careful to sort of thread that needle between being viewed by Democrats as someone who's willing to take the fight to the president on issues where the Democrats and Republicans disagree. And on the other hand, he's got to be careful that he doesn't do it in a way that causes him pain back home.
Well, not only back home, but this is a guy who most of us assume wants to be president of the United States. And we know that he made a series of miscalculations, at least I think he did, which was that he thought that he could be a sort of Clintonian conservative Democrat coming in, and he lost his left, and he's been backpedaling all the time, doing the backstroke, trying to figure out how to get more to be perceived as being more liberal. And therefore, he comes up with these great ideas like free tuition, which you have pointed out so brilliantly for people under $125,000, you pointed out so brilliantly, isn't all that it seems. We're going to talk about that later. But in the meantime, if he wants to be president, then he's got to go after Trump. It's that simple.
You have to win the primaries, right? You don't get to be, if he's going to run for president, he's going to make it through the primaries and be the nominee. And that is really...
He's got to take speech lessons.
I think he does a pretty good job of delivering speeches, certainly in the relative scheme of who you look at across the country.
Well, that puts us on different sides of the table.
All right, fair enough. You know, to win the primaries, you got to be sort of appealing to the left wing of the party, just like the reverse would be true when you're running on the Republican side. And so, again, I think that there's that tension between governing and being an advocate. And if you're a U.S. senator, you can get away with sort of freewheeling attacks on a president of the other party.
Sure.
It's much harder when you're a governor because you do rely on the federal government for some portion of your budget and the regulatory environment in which you live.
And one of the crucial areas is going to be Medicaid, right?
Yeah, Medicaid is going to be huge. If the Affordable Care Act, the repeal and so-called replace.
Obamacare.
AKA the big lie that there is a replacement. This is just about repealing it. But nevertheless, it'll have an impact on New York. New York is the nation's center for health care. Tons of hospitals, particularly cutting edge. And if you start cutting back on insurance, either through Medicaid or the Affordable Care Act, you're going to have financial implications for the city's hospitals, particularly the public hospitals, who are already living on the razor's edge between life or financial death.
So what does he do?
I think he's going to be zigzagging, right? As an old Paul once told me in Manhattan that he said, in politics, you want to zigzag. It's like driving in Manhattan. Never just drive down the lane. If you zigzag back and forth, people worry about you on both sides of the road. So it wouldn't surprise me if a zigzag approach turns out to be the most politically helpful way for the governor to proceed, if in fact, in any circumstance, but certainly if in fact he's considering a national run.
So you've been testifying lately before the budget committees, and we started with the premise that the guys in the legislature are furious at the governor, both houses, for not giving them a raise. We all know that that's what happened.
Particularly the Assembly.
Isn't that interesting? Particularly the Assembly, because the Senate guys...
They all have committee chairs. They all have extra payments. Every single one of the members of the Senate gets some additional stipend. On the Assembly side, all the Republicans do, because there's so few of them, but only about half of the Democrats do. the other half of the Democratic backbenchers live purely on the $79,500, and they would have liked to have had a pay raise.
And they are angry.
And they're not thrilled about it. There's no doubt about that. It's palpable.
And how is that palpability, how is it manifesting itself?
Well, at the moment, it's all grousing and complaining. And I mean, the clearest evidence that it's real is that the governor did not have a State of the State address where the legislature was there and didn't deliver a budget address where the legislature was there. Because the last thing in the world he would want to have is like last year when Assemblyman Barron started yelling at him from the floor. This time it would have been on steroids, right? I mean, he could have faced a situation like de Blasio did with the cops, where they all turned his back on him at that speech. So the governor did not want that. So that's the clearest evidence that it's real, is because the governor is, I think, reacting, at least partially, to the concern that this could be a sort of bad optics. And how it plays out, it's hard to say, because the governor has such institutional power vis-a-vis the legislature. They need him if they want to get anything done. He controls the budget process by and large. So how it plays out, I think, is going to be sparring on policy matters this week at the hearing on higher education.
So let's talk about higher education in New York. The governor comes up, a brilliant optic, and he says anybody under $125,000 in their family, the individual, a year, they get free tuition at the state university. I'm a big free tuition fan, went to Hunter College myself. It was free tuition at the time. I know there were a lot of people who would not have afforded it. But now we're under $125,000 because the poor kids could be taken care of with one thing or another.
They already are.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. But the middle class always felt screwed.
That's an academic term, right?
Yeah, right. It is. That's what it is. So along comes Cuomo and says, under $125,000. Wow, now he's talking to me. And those are the voters right there.
And he announced it with U.S. Senator from Vermont, Bernie Sanders.
Right, which Sanders
who had championed
did him a
the
favor.
Whole issue. That's right. So now the details come out, right? And now it's not as broad or as clear as to what it was. The governor originally was saying that up to 1 million families in New York would be eligible. And then yesterday at the hearing, they were saying they only thought 32,000 would get it. Although there seems to be some debate over the numbers in terms of who qualifies and how much they're going to get. It's really an add-on to the existing structure. So as I mentioned earlier, the poorest public college students already have their tuition covered. So they're already in. They're already in the tuition-free program by being poor. And under New York's current system, as you go up the income scale, the state's subsidy of your tuition benefit decreases. And right now it goes from anywhere from, I think, somewhere in the neighborhood of family incomes of around $50,000 to $80,000 adjusted under state taxable income. You get about $500. Under the governor's proposal, all of that goes up to the full freight of the tuition benefit. And then new students that don't get any benefit from $80,000 to about $100,000 the first year, they would get a benefit under the governor's plan. So there's benefits for those people, but at the same time in his budget, he's cutting opportunity programs, cutting funding for programs that help poor and disadvantaged students make it in college. And these are programs that have long time demonstrated success rates. The students that are in those programs graduate at higher rates than the normal general student body. And it's been tremendously effective. The governor's cutting the funding for those programs. At the same time, he's raising tuition for college students over $125,000. So this tuition-free thing sort of depends where you sit, you know, in terms of the benefit for it. And on top of it, some of it may be paid for with cuts. The governor's flatlining state support for the public colleges and universities, whatever benefits they'll be getting really are going to come out of these tuition hikes, it looks like. And so the poorest kids were going to lose out under the governor's proposal. And the middle-income kids, 60 or 120, 100,000 the first year, they'll benefit. And above that, they'll pay more.
We're talking to Blair Horner from the New York Public Interest Research Group. Blair, what's the millionaire's tax?
Well, under New York law, we have a progressive income tax structure. So depending on the tax bracket you're in, you pay, as you go up in income, you pay a higher and higher percentage of your income in taxes. The highest, the so-called millionaires, I don't remember off the top of my head what the bracket is made up of, but it includes millionaires. And it's about 8.8%, I think, is the income rate for that group. The law that sets that progressive income structure expires at the end of 2017. And so one of the debates is, do you extend it or not? And the governor's budget calls for extending that tax structure as it is, with some reduction in rates for middle-income New Yorkers, but maintaining the high rate for the high earners.
And naturally, so, the New York State Senate loves this proposal.
Well, so yeah, now here's the fight, right? So the fight is the arguments being made primarily by conservatives and the Senate Republicans and business people, that by having a higher tax rate, you're hurting the economy of the state of New York because wealthy people don't want to live here. Now, on the other side, the argument is being made, the state is not such a great financial shape. We need every dime we can get. And if the feds cut these programs like healthcare or federal funding to the arts or whatever the heck it is, the state's budget structure is going to be under more stress. You can't give away money. So that's, I think, how the fight is going to play out. The so-called millionaire's tax is really to maintain that top bracket at the higher rate. And that really, I think, is going to be where the fight is. The governor's basically conceded it at the middle income rates that he wants to lower the rates even more than he did 3 years ago, or whatever the year was, 4 years ago, when this proposal first went into effect.
Huh. And what will the Senate do about all of this?
Well, I mean, they need the money. They need the money for the programs, too.
Right.
I mean, they're sort of stuck. They have an ideological, and I assume to some extent, substantive argument that higher marginal tax rates for higher income individuals is a drag on economic development. And they believe that. But they want funding for education programs just like the Democrats do, and healthcare programs. And that's the big chunk of the budget. So, I mean, at the end of the day, I mean, who knows? You never know what could happen in the world of politics. But they do need the money. And ultimately, I think funding for programs trumps ideology in both the Senate and Assembly when it comes to the deal down the road. Now, maybe they'll lower it a little bit, but the state is, you know, I think the state is concerned, rightfully, that they don't know the implications of a Trump administration on the state of New York's finances.
Now, there's a law that's being proposed for medical aid in dying, and it is being pushed by one of the so-called traitors, the people who've gone over to the Republican side, but who's allegedly a Democrat, Diane Savino. And, you know, there are many of us, like me, who say, okay, when it's all over, I don't want to be watching cancer eat my brain out. I may want to die peacefully, like we do with our animals. This has generated a lot of opposition.
Yeah, I mean, like the income tax issue, it's not one of the issues that I work on.
Right.
But as I get older, I pay more attention to it.
Until you get to my age.
I hope, God willing. There are states that have basically laws on the books that allow for the individual to determine when they want to die under certain circumstances. And I mean, this is a growing movement. As the boomers get older, everyone's thinking the same thing. It's not, I mean, everyone knows that no one escapes alive from life, right? And so the question really is how does that play out for you? And it's certainly a painful, awful, debilitating illness at the end of your life is maybe, for some people, it's not what they want to have. And so in New York, on the other hand, you have a very powerful and Catholic conference. The Catholic Church has a huge number of members in their congregations across the state. They have considerable political muscle and a philosophic point of view that is diametrically opposed to the sort of the larger scale way that this all gets played out. And so the politics are very rough. In some of the other states that have passed these laws, you don't have the same large amount of sort of a Catholic population. In the South, it's very hard because evangelicals tend to, and very Christian Protestant religions tend to view this the same way as the Catholics do. But in New York, which is typically a progressive state, there's the complicating factor of the Catholic Church. And so I don't know how this is going to play out. This issue has been kicking around for a while.
But it is interesting that you get somebody like Senator Diane Savino, who is one of those people who has gone over to help the Republicans organize over there. If Savino can get her group of the seven now people who are in this independent Democratic conference, IDC, to go along with the Democrats on this particular vote. And in the Assembly, you got Dick Gottfried, the chairman of the Health Committee, ready to support this. Could it pass?
Well, I this is an issue that does not necessarily play in a partisan way. There are, I mean, particularly when you think about, you know, who are Catholics, right? There are Catholics that are very conservative politically, and there are Catholics that are extremely liberal politically. And so it doesn't play necessarily. I mean, and there are Republicans in the state Senate that support this idea. There are Democrats in the state Senate that oppose it. So it's not entirely clear to me, and I'm not close enough to the action to know what the nose count is. But it's a, you know, extremely controversial issue. You have to worry about the blowback from your constituents. At the end of the day, it's a vote of conscience. And those are very can often be very tough calls and can be career enders. when the legislation passed for marriage equality in New York, the four Senate Republicans that voted for that are all out of office now.
And I remember when a man named Michaels, who was the deciding vote on abortion, he was out the minute he was done.
And so, I don't know how this stuff gets processed internally. And so it's much more complicated than your sort of straight up issue like on tax policy or spending, where you can sort of figure out where the parties are at. This cuts very differently in both houses.
Our friend Ken Lovett, who's frequently sitting where you sit, says
I felt the greatness.
Yeah, you could feel the heat emanating from the seat. It says that the governor is planning something called the Strategic Projects Program. Now, what this is obviously is people who don't admire the governor are saying this is going to be yet another big slush fund for him to take money out of and support, things of his choosing.
Well, I think we were talking earlier about the tension between the executive and the legislative branches. I think where you're going to start to, where this is the kind of thing where it can start to play out, where the legislature is going to want to say, we're a co-equal branch of government. We should have a say in how the spending is going on. We're not going to just allow you to do it in the same way as they might have been willing to do that 5 years ago. And so I think this is precisely the kind of area where you may have some conflict. Now, again, at the end of the day, the governor has a lot of leverage in the budget process. And whether or not the legislature can ultimately force him to concede control impartially over the program, I think that remains to be seen. But I think it'll be a big debate point in the budget process.
You've been watching Andrew Cuomo for a long time. You actually worked for him for a little while, setting up a public information program to make sure that things could be transparent. Do you see change in the guy? I'm not a big believer in character changing, but there are those of us who are watching him now and saying he's playing it a lot smarter than he was in the beginning. Is that only because third terms are tough?
Well, he has to get his third term, and he's going to run, and he has to be. The governor got elected in 2010, still in the aftermath of the Great Recession, and so. Not surprisingly, he and our budget, the state's finances were in a mess. So he comes in, he makes the state's finances his top priority. And I think his natural instincts as a Queens Democrat are to be more moderate than your Manhattan version or Brooklyn versions of Democrats, or maybe even City of Albany or an Ithaca versions of Democrats. And so, and that led to the attack from the left by Zephyr Teachout as he ran for the second term. So again, it's just a complicated sort of political formula that he has to sort of resolve, which is how do you, if you're going to run for a third term, how do you position yourself best to fend off a Democratic primary, at the same time not creating opportunities for a well-financed Republican, maybe a self-financed Republican, to come in and then seize the middle ground. So there's a tactical question there. And then if he really is thinking about a national strategy, it plays out again, right, where you have to still appeal to the Democratic activists even within all the states, and at the same time not leave yourself open to the attack on the middle by an incumbent Republican president. And we don't know where Trump will be in 4 years, but if he's successful in sort of moderating how people view him, he'd be a very difficult candidate to knock off.
So into all of this, I was in New York last week and went to a tremendous rally organized by the de Blasio people on a Thursday night. 26,000 people show up outside of Columbus Circle with some of the biggest stars you've ever seen or heard from. Mayor de Blasio was there. Governor Cuomo wasn't.
I don't know the governor's schedule. Hard to know exactly what was going on. But the two of them have certainly been in the cats and dogs category, I think, politically. And as your listeners know, for many years, whoever the mayor of the city of New York is and whoever the governor of the state of New York is, there's definitely institutional tension as to who is the alpha male.
But this is worse than that.
It's very personal. The men know each other. They profess to be friends. And yet, the infighting between the two of them is really at a sort of an incredible level, and it plays out. Now, again, when Pataki and Giuliani were in at the same time, that was no party either, because as you may recall, Giuliani was campaigning for then Governor Mario Cuomo, And so there was some tough times there, too. But yes, in the case of the mayor and the state and the governor, it's very tough right now.
Blair Horner, you know, there's this feud going on. I think it's a one-way feud between Cuomo and the comptroller, Tom DiNapoli, a man I think is the best public servant around. And Cuomo's staffers have been accused of hindering state controller audits at four agencies. Does this surprise you?
Well, the strategy of the administration has been to cut back the powers of the comptroller. There's been a number of laws that have passed, particularly looking at SUNY, for example, where there's all these scandals.
Yeah.
There have been laws that have passed from 2011 until recently, which cut back the auditing powers of the comptroller.
So shame on the assembly for going along with that.
Shame on everyone for doing it, right? I mean,
yeah.
The whole point of having a comptroller, a separately elected comptroller, is that they're supposed to be the independent watchdog of the books. And if you pull back the power of them to look at the books, you're inviting trouble. And there have been now scandals that have tarred the Cuomo administration. Now, how much of them are tied to the powers of the comptroller? I mean, only the U.S. attorney would know that. But it's certainly bad timing to have cut back the powers of the comptroller and then to find out that top aides to the governor and close allies of the governor are involved in a pay-to-play scandal that will be going to trial in the next couple of months.
Which might have been avoided, may I say, had the comptroller had the old powers as opposed to the ones they took away from him.
Well, and you know, we all behave differently when the cops are watching us, right? So maybe they wouldn't have behaved wrong.
Speaking of which, Blair Horner, it would not be a fair program if I didn't ask you about what the scuttlebutt is around about the coming trials of Joe Pococo and his ilk at the federal trials, in which Andrew Cuomo has to watch out for that, for a man who wants to run for president, maybe, and for governor.
Yeah, I mean, these trials are going to apparently happen, although you never know, right? They could cut a deal in advance. And it's not going to be, if you go to trial, even if the governor is not implicated at all, it's not going to paint a pretty picture.
He promised to clean up Albany.
Yeah, and it hasn't gone well. I mean, certainly you could argue that the broom, the shovel, and the bucket is still needed in Albany. In fact, you could argue it may even be worse. Nevertheless, going to trial is not going to be good for the administration, no matter what happens. You can ask Governor Christie about how trials play out, he certainly was more implicated than anything we've ever heard about this governor. But it's the Bridgegate trial did not make his administration look good, and it tanked his political career.
Say nothing of his 18% in the political
polls. That's right. Well, you know, Jersey's a blue state. Governor Christie plays it as a tough guy. He created a lot more enemies than he has friends. And once the roof caved in around the Bridgegate issue, there was nobody there to help him. As somebody once told you, in politics, friends are fleeting and enemies accumulate.
They are. So are you looking forward? I only have a minute for this, but are you looking forward to the coming year in Albany as the legislature gets down to brass tacks with a fiercely divided legislature and a fiercely divided governor legislature?
Yes. Every year I feel the same way. I may feel differently by the time the session's over. But in the beginning, hope springs eternal.
Yeah. I did hear very quickly of a new plan, a new ethics plan, which was that instead of limiting their outside income, they're going to go to the so-called ethics committee to tell them that they can do what they want to do to get outside.
You put lipstick on a pig, it's still a pig, right? So this is just cosmetics, and it's not real. We need independent oversight of both ethics and contracting in New York State. And unless they're willing to do it, the place is still going to be a problem.
We're out of time. Our guest has been Blair Horner, the executive director of NYPIRG. Blair, thanks so much for joining us. When you're here, things are always better, even in hard, bleak times. So we thank you for doing it.
Thanks for having me.
The Capital Connection is distributed with the cooperation of the public radio stations of New York State. David Gustina is the producer of The Capital Connection, a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio in Albany. Support for The Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.